Hello. Welcome to the podcast at For All Our Kids. You are listening to our Teacher to Parent segment. Last week, Dr. Kripa Murugesan, speech-language pathologist and assistant professor at Sri Ramachandra Institute of Higher Education and Research, cleared our doubts regarding developmental milestones in speech and language. Today, she answers questions from parents on different aspects of speech and language disorders and reiterates the importance of child-directed play.
So I wanted to do a follow-up session with you to clarify some of the questions we received from parents. What is the difference between a speech disorder and a language disorder?
A speech disorder is mostly where there is a difference in the way the information is conveyed. The how aspect of speaking is speech disorder. So there would be fluency-related issues where this flow is affected. Like, I may talk like this. Okay. So that's, but what I speak, the content is not affected. The right. way I deliver is affected. Or if I have some problem, like I'm not able to move my tongue, or I have a problem in my tongue or lips or teeth, then it's again a speech disorder where, again, the content is not affected, but the way I deliver, the clarity is affected. Sometimes even when we have a tooth removed or we have an anesthesia mm-hmm. for some time for a tooth removal or some procedure, we know our speech is not very clear. Or when somebody has a voice problem and, you know, they're not able to talk, there's a strained voice. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when we have a cold or a lot of politicians or vendors and hawkers on the road mm-hmm. who keep using their voice a lot, even right. teachers, they have a voice-related concern. So those are all speech disorder. Language disorder is with respect to how the content is conveyed. There could be less number of vocabulary. Words, 3-year-old child who's developing typically may talk in 3 to 4 word utterances. But a child who has a language disorder may talk like a 1-year-old or a 2-year-old. It could be due to multiple reasons, like he has a hearing loss or a vision-related issue, or he has a cognitive impairment from birth where there's intellectual disability or a processing-related issue like an autism spectrum disorder or an attention-related issue like okay. we see in attention deficit hyperactive disorder. Or there could just be a delay because the child did not have enough people to talk to at home or pampered too much that everything is given to the child before the child asks for it.
There's no anticipation.
Exactly. Some children are not even left to crawl. They're always carried and they're not left enough to explore, mm-hmm. go around and pull things, name it. And those are all language disorders.
What are some common reasons that a child may show speech delays?
There could be a lot of reasons. Like one is sensory related, okay. where they can't hear or they were not able to see. We've had an instance where a 7-year-old came and she was not speaking adequately. She had some issues in copying, noting down, dictations mm-hmm. and all. But she responds when we call her name. Then later we realized she has a unilateral hearing loss. So one ear alone was poor in picking up signals. The other one was good. So mm-hmm. it was compensatory and tends to get missed out. Sometimes children have high frequency hearing loss mm-hmm. where only the high frequency sounds are not heard clearly. Okay. Or there could be other cognitive-related issues. There could be some birth-related complications, mm-hmm. which would have led to some injury in the brain, mm-hmm. or any other reasons where there is an intellectual disability. The child's cognition, the IQ is low. That could be a reason why their child is talking late. Such children might have even started walking late. There could be neurological issues like cerebral palsy, where the child has also seizures. The child has other issues like the motor movements. Or there could also be other conditions like learning-related issues where only when they go to school, we will identify them. Till then, it will manifest only as a delay. The child may have some delay. They're not talking like the peer. The child doesn't reason out things, does not know the cause and effect relationship. And all that is noted, but probably we feel the child does not have enough exposure. Or sometimes we say, we were joint family earlier, we are nuclear now. That's why the child is not having exposure. Uh-huh. It's not necessary nuclear family has to have less exposure. So those could be misdiagnosed. And later when the child goes to school, we see letter reversals are there. Child has issues with joining, putting words together, segmenting the words and sounds. Then we realize, oh, probably this is the reason why he had an issue earlier.
So I remember seeing a child who was in fourth grade. He'd gone for assessments and they'd done the assessments, but the poor child had had multiple ear infections and he wasn't able to hear, but they had still done the assessments. So when I asked the parents, they didn't realize that they had to do something at that age to do something about the ear infection and the temporary hearing loss.
And temporary hearing loss, when left unattended, can lead to a permanent loss where the child is not going to hear. Is totally dependent on the visual cues, the lip reading, and whatever the child sees. Often, we think it'll be fine, or we think it's okay to wait and watch. When we have a doubt, I would always suggest immediately get an assessment done. Wait and watch always doesn't help because we miss the critical time, the early intervention phase, and then regret later.
One of the other questions that came to us, my three-year-old pulls my hand and points to things he wants. He's communicating because people in the family know what he wants. Should I wait for some more time before I start worrying?
If he is not using words, it's advisable not to wait and start off intervention. At least consult and get ideas on what can be incorporated at home. It's good that he has an intent to communicate, that he's trying to pull the hand. There are children who do not want. They will go take it themselves or they'll just be happy without anyone's attention. But at least he's calling and pulling. In such scenarios, we always recommend talk for the child. Be the voice for the child. When he comes and points, say, Mama biscuit, Mama go, Mama come. When he comes and pulls, whatever the child should say it for the child. So that way the child understands, oh, this is what I have to say here. And it's easy to just copy and tell, imitate. Right. And then sometimes parents would say, when he comes and pulls, in this instance like that, sometimes parents would say, you want me to come? You say come, then I will come. That's an absolute no recommendation from us. Never do it. Never express that I've understood what you want, but you tell it verbally. The child may ask for something, water, or he'll say, oh, you want water? They grab the bottle and say, you say water, I will give the water.
That's right.
That affects the child's ego. And they also understand that it's understood. Why should I ask for it? Some children just leave it and go, or they start crying. They start throwing tantrums and 90% of the parents, when they start throwing tantrums, they will end up giving to calm the child. But then the child learns, okay, if I don't get it, I can throw tantrums and get it. That becomes a habit over time and gets difficult later to break. You just talk for the child or give them choices. You want water or you want juice? He points out to something or he takes a mother's hand and points. I want water. You won't say, you want water. I say, oh, I want water. Whatever the child should say, the parent says it and gives it. And gradually focus on getting it out of the child.
That is true. That withholding.
Yeah.
And then when the child cries, we give it.
Yes.
So my four-year-old daughter has a lot of behavior problems. I was told to take her to a speech therapist because she's not talking very much. What is the connection between talking and behavior?
Sort of
goes back to the other.
Yeah, it's very much linked. And think of our spouse or our parents. Somebody takes us to a family member's house whom we really don't like. What do? We don't talk much. We express our dislike towards objects and we show it in a way where we cannot talk in them. Or sometimes our teacher or somebody in a superior position gives us work or does something and we're not able to talk back. We bang the door and go. We throw things. We throw the files. We express it in some other ways. Similarly, when children are not able to communicate and whatever they communicate is not understood by the parent or whoever is talking to them, they show it through other ways. They have temper tantrums, they bang things, they throw things. The child might have indicated that I want Italy today, but the parent would have made something else. So she throws it. So the parent thinks, no, the child is just throwing. They try to force feed. Mm-hmm. So it's actually increasing that. Just imagine ourselves in that position. When we are forced to do things that we don't like, we only know to throw things, cry, shout. And that's what children are doing. We only need to sit back and think and find out the reason. Every behavior has an antecedent. It has something that's led to this. And a behavior from a child is only a consequence of what we are doing. So if you identify that and then give them the choice to choose or explain to them that this cannot be done now. And sometimes we keep waiting for the child to keep talking verbally and keep forcing the child. But there are other ways, just like how we were talking about language. There are multiple ways to communicate.
So if a child is not talking, instead of just waiting, it's good for parents and other family members to learn signs or like consistent gestures. Yeah. There has to be some way of expression. Not being able to communicate must be so frustrating for the child, because a three-year-old wants to say so much. There's so much they understand and exactly. They want to get it out. But not being able to do that must be incredibly frustrating.
And because they don't express, we also underestimate their understanding capacity. Yes. We don't know whether they know this. Many times parents come and see and they, I didn't know he knows this.
Huh.
Because the children are wonderful observants and mm-hmm. they would have observed a lot of things. They know much better. And when we give them a channel to communicate, definitely they do. It could be simple signs. It could be showing pictures. It could be showing actions. When we want water, we just show our hand. And when we wave bye, we just don't say bye. We wave. But sometimes, unfortunately, we do, as professionals or parents, we think if we introduce other ways of communication, the child's ability to speak may reduce. It's definitely not that. We all communicate through multimodality ways. Mm-hmm. So it's important that we encourage that to children. There are some schools which, or even daycare centers which introduce gestures to communicate even at very young age.
Oh, great.
Like 1.5, 2 years, they mm-hmm. teach them more. They teach them by intentionally, consciously, mm-hmm. these are taught. But unfortunately, when the child has a delay, we think we should restrict all of this. That's again cutting down another channel. So when we give a channel to communicate, the behavior automatically reduces mm-hmm. the undesirable ones. And child start understanding, okay, I have a point to make and my information or my behavior is acknowledged. And the child feels like communicating more.
Another question. How is a child's play connected to speech and language development?
Play starts very young. We even keep telling parents to play, play, play. They ask us, you know, how can I make my child start talking? Play. Forget everything and play. So children start developing play very young, when they start moving, when they start taking things and putting into their mouth. A lot of cognitive, sensory, motor and communication skills, all these are interlinked. And when children start taking objects, they put it into their mouth, they start chewing. That's an exploratory play. Even us, when we get a phone, the function of the phone is to call somebody. The moment we get a new phone, what do? We explore and try to find what are the functionalities. So children do the same. When they get a toy, they explore. And when they do it, it means they are on the right track. We try to say, oh, no, don't play like this. This has to be played by these rules. We should not be doing that. We let them explore first. The same thing with books or mm-hmm. any objects. Explore. Exploratory play starts first. Then they do functional play, which is playing with the object the way it has to be. It could be the kitchen set, a doctor set, or a toy, a ball to throw and catch. That's the functional play. And gradually they start manipulating the toys, moving, trying to see what all parts will get removed, mm-hmm. what all can be fixed, what makes sound, what has different texture, all that happens. And then when they start looking at other children play, they actually start looking at what they're doing, how are they playing. They learn from each other. Then there comes parallel play. One child plays, another child plays next to each other. Slowly there's a cooperative play where they share things. And then they play together. They take turns. So there a lot of communication comes in. I have to wait. I want this. When they start fighting, all of us would have experienced at our home, there'll be some toy which is untouched for years or months. And when another child comes and takes it, at the end of the, I want this. It's mine. It's mine. And so far this child would have not even been talking. But where did this, it's mine, come from? So there's a lot of communication that happens with play. And when we do role plays, like, you know, kitchen set, doctor set, there is waiting for turns. One day this child is a doctor. The another day, another child is a doctor. The same child gets into a patient role. And then there's this theory of mind, which we talk about a lot with autism spectrum disorder, where understanding others' perspective is a challenge. So this is when it comes into play, when they do pretend play. They act out role plays and then they have to act like another person. So they have to change their voice accordingly. Their body language has to change. So there's so much of cognition, thinking, effect that's coming into play. And then they have to deliver it only through communication. So there's so much they learn. It's not a fixed routine, but they modify based on whom they're playing with.
Right.
And play is the best connect to another person.
When the adult plays with the child, the adult is adapting to the child. Whereas exactly. when they play with the peers, the child has to learn a completely different set of skills. Because it's another child, not the adult who's anticipating their every move.
And there's a lot of win and lose when they do with the child. Sometimes adults give up and they try to adjust to the child. But when it's another child, they fight. And when they fight, we always suggest to parents, when you have a play date, if there's a fight, they want to escalate, they will escalate. You don't go and barge in. There are times when parents brought in a video saying, wow, I had a play date with my child. And then we saw the video, three mothers, three children, and they're completely directing what the child has to do. You take this, it's your turn. You say like this. So we say there should be some unstructured play. Let them play however they want. No rules. They set their own rules. 50% of the time, at least unstructured. 50% you'd guide the way that you want because you want to facilitate communication in that. But 50% at least unstructured. Do it the way they want.
Another question. When children watch YouTube videos, they learn so many things. So why do experts tell us that we mustn't give screen time to kids? Is there an age limit when kids can start watching TV?
Pre-COVID, there was a different way of telling post-COVID. It's all different because since COVID with lockdown, children, everybody was exposed to long hours of a screen. But having said that, American Pediatric Association, even the Indian Pediatric Association, all of them recommend zero screen time for less than 2-year-old. But sometimes it's not really possible, especially when it's a very small family, there's nobody to take care, the mother has to go into the kitchen. We give them ideas. We ask them for the routine and give them ideas on how they can reduce the screen time. We don't tell them zero screen time because it's practically not possible. And when we say zero, they will not listen to us at all. When we try to understand the situation at home and we give them ideas, use it instead of this. Do this play. Reduce the half an hour to 15 minutes. Reduce the 6 hours or 7 hours to only during certain times. Do it after the child does this. Let it be like a reinforcement. The child finishes this activity, then he can watch something. There are children who have picked up a lot of vocabulary from YouTube videos. They have picked up. I won't deny that.
Right.
There are 6-7-year-old children who come and they don't talk at all. And they don't have any sensory issues, no other issues. Okay. Just because they were on screen through the day. And it becomes more like an addiction that they have to see it. Even now, parents slowly reduce it, but sometimes they do show it to them when they're eating. They say that's when he eats, or else he doesn't eat at all. Then we say at least of the 3 meals, at least 2 you do without it. One you do without the screen, gradually make it to 2. The child has to explore. It's okay if he eats less, but he needs to feel the texture. He needs to know what he's eating.
Yes.
A lot of overeating has happened because of screen, because they don't know how much they're eating. And they want to continue eating because they know the mother will show the screen till the child eats. After that, they'll take it off.
Oh, okay.
So that is there. When we go to restaurants now, if you see children are in front of
things,
we also suggest sometimes when I do with my children is I take 3-4 toys in hand and I don't release everything in one go. So once they get bored with something, then another. Menu card is another one. They can just actually run through their fingers and look at it. There are many ways to engage. Mm-hmm. But parents are scared and sometimes we just want to just sit and relax because it's a long day of, you know, taking care of kitchen, cooking, washing. So much would be there. But sometimes off the screen is very important.
Yes.
And using it once in a while when I'm really tired, I'm unwell, I want my child to be occupied for some time. That's fine. But on a daily basis for long hours is definitely a no.
That's a good point that, you know, about reducing the hours rather than saying...
Don't
Absolutely.
Give at all.
Yeah. Because you have to work with what they need.
Mm-hmm.
Another question. Children who are now school age went through the COVID period during their critical language burst years. What have you observed in terms of their needs? Are our schools prepared to meet their needs?
Children who are in school now, my younger son was born during COVID and the time that they were supposed to go around and explore was inside, indoor. And a lot of them had excessive screen time. That was the only way parents were able to occupy them. Some of them have developed a few words from that. Some have a significant delay without any associated issues, only a language delay because they were on screen for a longer time. Again, there's some interesting facts we saw in those children. The vocabulary has mask, which used to be a word that we learned very late. Virus, mask, sanitizer, these are words that they actually understand. Also, their learning from digital media is very good. Some of those traditional schools where digital media is not really there, complete board teaching, are definitely finding it hard to sustain the attention. Their attention span is very less generally, and 25-30 minutes, and now they need something creative. They need something where they have to be participatory than just listening to something. I think even with adults, our attention span has gone down. I'm personally not able to sit and listen to a webinar or attend a conference like the way I used to do pre-COVID.
Okay.
I think that restlessness, our attention has gone down. And I think schools have realized. I see some of the schools where there were no screens have put up screens in every classroom. Okay. There's a digital platform where they can actually play music or show videos, show educational materials, mm-hmm. which enhances teaching better. A one-hour class is easily transacted in 7 to 10 minutes of a video because everything is visually represented. Present generation, I think, are more visual learners. They understand that better. Schools are understanding that there is a need to change and they are working towards it. Even those schools which used to be very traditional and not supporting a lot of co-curricular activities mm-hmm. are focusing a lot on that. Doing clubs, creative activities, that's nice. That helps in skill development. I think they are going beyond books. A lot of schools, like it used to be a model that was considered a very Western model or a Montessori-based mm-hmm. model. But now even general schools are taking up such activities. There are schools which have no book days. Storytelling sessions are a part of everyday activities. So I think schools are realizing and doing it.
One of the questions that we got from a parent was, my child has some speech problems. When we were overseas, she got therapy in her regular school. But here we take her to therapy after school. Do you think our schools will start giving therapy?
We see that there's a trend that's changing. A lot of schools are being sensitive about neurodiverse population and they are taking in children with special needs. Mm. Some schools are not really inclusive, but they are like any other child and they take therapy outside. There are some schools where they have inclusive setup. They have a special ed, they have a occupation therapist, speech language pathologist in-house who do a pull-out model depending on the child. The child is either pulled out 10% of the time, 20% of the time, or some only do after school hours, depending on their needs. And there are in-house professionals. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, parents want more therapy. In the evenings, the child is not occupied. For a child who does not have special needs, the choice that comes to a parent is an extracurricular activity, swimming, drawing, dance. But for a child with special needs, the evening is free. Oh, let me look for some therapy for him. Instead of giving them an opportunity to learn another skill, we don't need to bombard them with so much therapy. There should be at least 1 or 2 days free where the child can do something. It will depend on how accessible these coaching classes are. Okay. Are they okay to take neurodivergent children? So that also have
to be
looked at.
That's a good point. It can't always be therapy, special ed, therapy, special ed. It has to be the fun, other fun classes as well.
And they learn a lot from other children when they go and do these things.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kripa. Your podcast is going to be very beneficial for parents. Thank you again.
Thank you so much for giving this opportunity for me and having me.
With that, we end our episode today. As Dr. Kripa reiterated, children's language skills develop when we follow their lead instead of engaging in a question and answer session with them. If you have any more questions for Dr. Kripa, do write to us at podcast@forallourkids.com. That is podcast@forallourkids.com. Until next time, goodbye from all of us at For All Our Kids.